it's in the mail.
Coming up this week on LA Theater Works.
A parish priest undergoes a crisis of faith with potentially devastating consequences.
We were discussing how much we should be pushing Christ at people and how much they should be left to find him for themselves.
It's like a nail bomb. You touch that subject, it goes off. Are you crazy? In every direction.
Racing Demon by David Hare. Next time on LA Theater Works.
That's this Sunday evening from 10 p.m. until midnight. LA Theater Works right here on KPFK.
DJ Damde from Radio Aphrodisia. Join us every Saturday as we nice up your weekend. It's all about music from Africa and the African world. Radio Aphrodisia, 4 to 6 p.m. It's Champeta Criolla from the coast of Caribbean, Soca Calypso, Juju Music, Musica Afro-Cubana, Cha-Cha-Cha, Afrobeat Highlife. It's all in the mix. Radio Aphrodisia, Saturdays, 4 to 6 p.m. Showtime. Tune in.
This is Quetzal Flores from the band Quetzal, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 Los Angeles.
Cue the conga playing penguins.
Live at you. For real.
Oh, yeah.
The program's about to begin.
Orale! That's right, and it's for the people, live in effect, the Pocho Hour of Power, Holmes. What's up, Jeffrey? How you doing?
Yeah, man, Pocho Hour Power, KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm Jeff Kelly.
USA!
You know what,
Jeff?
We won 2-0 today.
Jeffrey, I'm going to tell you a story another day.
Oh, Lord.
I have a story about this.
About what? The World Cup?
Nah, man. It's just like the other day, man. It happened. Look, man, this happened. I say the other day, but it was back in the day.
Back in the day. All right.
Yeah,
what happened?
When I was traveling. I was on this road trip right through the South, right? I went into this bar.
Uh-huh.
Some redneck was staring me down.
What?
Staring me down.
Not
bro.
Staring you down.
Yeah.
Who do you think
and then,
he is?
You know what he told me when I was leaving, coming in. He's like, hey, man, Mexico is that way.
Oh, damn. And did he at least point the right way?
I have no, you know, I'm directionally challenged. Okay. I don't know if he was pointing the right way. And I said, who are you talking to? And he said, I'm talking to you,
okay.
S.A. And then the whole bar erupted. USA! 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 And then I had to basically get back in my rig and run the bar down.
Why would you drive in a rig?
Because I used to be a trucker.
No, you didn't. Stop it. Well, I just noticed that Alex Freeman and then USA won today against Australia, so they advanced to the knockout round.
Yeah, USA won, but not USA.
That's funny.
No, it's not.
USA.
If you have to say it's funny, it's not funny, Jeff.
I do, though, want to send my condolences out to the Tom Dreesen family, comedian extraordinaire, 82 years old. Him and Tim Reed from KPRP, is that what it was? Station, the sitcom?
WKRP in Cincinnati?
Yeah.
That's
the one. That's Tim Reed. He played Venus Flytrap.
Yeah, yeah.
Those two were the first black-white comedy team ever in the 60s. They would do the Chitlin Circuit. And we actually had them on this show, and I interviewed them.
You mean way before Peter Lawford and Sammy Davis Jr.?
Yes.
Salt and Pepper, they called themselves the original Salt and Pepper?
Yes. But
well, they put the hard R on Pepper. Though.
I'm sure they did. But they were actually on our show because they wrote a book about it.
Yeah, I had
a chance to interview him about it. Yeah,
that was some years back.
Yeah, and it was a great interview. But Tom has passed away. He was on the Tonight Show 61 times. He also opened for Frank Sinatra.
Wow.
And I used to love just sitting down having conversations. He was a big Dodger fan. And every time he came into the club, we would sit down and talk and have conversations about that. And Frank Sinatra and you know, Sammy Davis, they all had stories about Frank. And he's going to be missed, man. He passed away a couple of days ago. So you're missed, Tom Dreesen. Love you, man. All right.
It's the season of those. It's the season of those boomers, man. It's like we're losing all these icons that we grew up with. I mean, the ages pass and people are getting older. And Jeffrey, it's going to happen to us one day. It's going to happen to us.
Man, don't put that out there. How you putting that out there? Yeah, that's cold.
They might find our skeletal remains in these chairs one day.
That's funny. And I still want to shout out to my high school coach, Tony Zane, and Ty Pagoni. If you live in Baldwin Park, please email the school board because we do want that field named after Ty Pagoni and Tony Zane. They did a lot for the community. They helped a lot of guys like myself and others, not just on the football field but off the football field. Tony would always call and check on me. Lawrence Phillips, who was in a boys' home, they got him to play. He ended up going to Nebraska playing with the Rams. So they put out a lot of guys.
Was that
there.
Like your first football coach, or one of your early football coaches?
Well, you know, I played flag football until high school.
Okay.
And then, I'll tell you a little story before we get to Patricia. I was banging, right? I got jumped into a gang. And so I wasn't going to play football. I was just going to play baseball. And this guy named Mr. Smith, this Jerry Smith, I'll never forget it. You can't do this today. He grabbed me, threw me up against the locker and said, "You going to be playing football. I want you out there tomorrow." And I'm like, okay. And he actually saved my life, you know, because my brother got stabbed and almost bled out on the front yard. He had 187 stitches. Whoa. If he would have waited like 2 more minutes, he would have bled out. We had drive-bys after. You know, it was crazy at the high school. So actually, they saved my life. And so that's why I feel, it wasn't just my life, but a lot of other people's lives, that the field should be named after Tony Zane and Ty Pagoni. And that's why you in Baldwin Park, you need to email, call the school board, and tell them you're down for that.
Dang, that's cool. But speaking of football, there's a whole other football title ship going on with the World Cup. Are you watching that?
Oh, yeah, I'm watching another. Yeah, man, come cool. on.
Oh, that's not why you scream USA, USA?
Yeah, that's why I yell USA,
yeah, but I'm
USA.
Screaming Mexico, Mexico. Because they've already gone.
Now they're going to protest out here now saying that we aren't, we don't feel America. We're not American. Go back to Mexico. I got here. God dang it, you need to go back. Yeah.
Redneck bar.
Well, they thought you was a redneck because you pulled up in a truck. He's one of us. All right. Can we start the band, please? Enough of this madness.
Patricia Guadalupe, Pocho correspondent from Washington, D.C. Hail to Patricia, she comes to spread the cheese. She comes with all the gossip, she's here to spill the tea.
Yes, yes.
Hey, guys.
Spill that tea, girl. Spill that tea.
Another Friday. And, you know, I got to start with the World Cup, since you've been talking about that, because I was watching the U.S.-Australia game in Spanish. And, of course, the feed is American, you know, a U.S. feed.
Right.
So they were showing Russell Wilson and Marshawn Marshawn Lynch and a few other the Seattle Seahawks and some other folks out there. And Andres Cantor, who, as you know, is the famous goal guy in Spanish, he was saying, who are these people? why do we keep showing these people? Nobody cares about them. Let's focus on the World Cup. I'm really annoyed that they keep showing these people. And one of the other announcers, well, that's Marshawn. That's Marshawn. He's like, who? Who's that? And who's Russell Wilson? It was, if you didn't see it, it was hilarious because it just goes to show you how the World Cup is definitely the world, but when you're showing it in the U.S. with a camera controlled by the an American feed, they're going to go over to these celebrities that the rest of the world may not know about. So I thought that was kind of funny. And then, of course, we're coming back to the other Washington, because that was in Seattle, Washington. So here in Washington, D.C., the big thing is the reflecting pool, people.
Oh, yeah.
If you've been following that, the reflecting pool is that nice body of water between the U.S. Capitol and the Washington Monument. And it's called the reflecting pool because you can, when the sun shines on it in a particular angle, you can see the Washington Monument and even the Lincoln Memorial reflected in the water, up until Trump decided to empty it out and paint it dark blue. And what happens with that? When the sun shines on standing water, it creates a lot of algae. And so now the reflecting pool is basically all green, and they've been spending buku dollars trying to fix that. And here's the wild thing about it. This was a no-bid contract with a Trump supporter.
Yep.
And the company name, check out the name of the company, Green Water Services. So they're living up to their name. And this guy, his name is John Carafo, he had pled guilty years ago to bribery charges, yep, and campaign finance violations, where he was trying to bribe some members of Congress.
Yeah, senator.
This is a guy who was in charge of doing that.
So you might say, like, this job was like his ultimate goal.
Pretty much,
like, to get in there, let me get one of these big multi-million-dollar contracts.
Yeah, because it's now up to $15 million.
Oh, my God.
It was supposed to only be less, about $800,000 to fix it. That was the original contract. But here is the slick thing of it. This company added a caveat to it that if they had to keep working on it, that the government was going to continue to pay them extra on top of everything else. So right now, the government has paid that company more than $2 million. And the paint is peeling. There's algae all over the place. It's completely green. As you can imagine, social media is having a field day with this, because they showed one of the workers out there pouring a gallon of hydrogen peroxide into the water. God. So now the social media shows ducks with blonde hair.
Of course.
and a scientist going on and saying, you know, that 1 gallon of hydrogen peroxide isn't going to do a damn thing. You need about 800,000 gallons of hydrogen peroxide if you're going to be doing that. Meanwhile, the tourists are going over there and taking pictures, and they're kneeling into the water because it's not too deep.
Ouch.
Because the water goes up to your ankles pretty much. They're kneeling into the water and taking pieces of that paint as souvenirs.
Well, you know, Trump is the great negotiator, right? He negotiated the heck out of that deal.
Yeah, he sure did, you know, and he's saying, you know, well, we're gonna fix it. And so what they're doing now is draining some of that water right into the sewer system in D.C.,
which
people are not happy about. So all of that green and hydrogen peroxide and whatever other chemicals are in there, including a very funny meme of RFK Jr. pouring some ivermectin into the water to, you know, that COVID medicine.
Right.
It is an unbelievable boondoggle.
Maybe he did this on purpose because he wanted to at least own up or deliver one of his campaign promises, which was to drain the swamp.
Yes.
Well, and he did that, but you know,
created the swamp and then drained it.
Well, you know, that could be true, but you know, there is a very really good social meme that says this guy can't even win a war against algae. You know,
hilarious. Everything he touches turns into a mess. That's the craziness.
And that's
why he has to have so much surround himself with painted gold.
And this is the other thing. Speaking of war, where you know that we've been following this whole issue of the war with Iran, and a deal that he signed while he was over at the G7 summit a couple of days ago over in France. But it's not really a deal. It's more of a memo of understanding, right, to kind of start negotiations. But here's the deal, folks.
Yeah, the memo of understanding. This is one of the most complicated descriptions of some kind of peace deal I've ever heard, right?
Well, it's basically we're going to sign this piece of paper so that we can start talking about continuing the talk. That's basically what they're doing. Because there's no promise.
It's like he got a peace agreement from Costco, a little taste.
Pretty much. You know, he went online and is, okay, you signed this, and then that means that we're going to start talking about something that we need to talk about. And Iran is like, uh-huh, you know, sure. Because this particular agreement that they're going to supposedly come to, there's no promise that Iran is not going to have any nuclear weapons, which is the opposite of the agreement that Obama had with them. Iran is going to control the Straits of Hormuz, which they didn't before. And for the first 60 days, it's free passage. And then come and get your credit card, because Iran is going to start charging any shipments that go through that strait, which in the original agreement under Obama that Trump tore up, it was all free passage and Iran was not controlling it. And here's the thing that is pissing off a lot of people in Congress, including Republicans. $300 billion, billion with a B, a rebuilding fund to Iran that was not in the original agreement. And a lot of members of Congress, including some hardline Republicans, have said, oh, we're not going to do this. This is not happening. We're not going to give $300 billion to Iran. That's not going to happen.
But normally when the United States does these kind of incursions and causes all this damage, even in the Iraq war, Bush agreed to rebuilding and helping, right? Because it's kind of like a you break it, you buy it policy, right?
But you didn't have to break it in the first place.
There was exactly. That's the problem. The problem is that there was no need for all this.
I mean, if you're going to compare it to Iraq, Iraq was actually pretty belligerent at that particular time. Iran didn't do this at all.
Of course
not. Yeah. And then you have, you know, 13 U.S. troops that died, you know, unfortunately, for looks like for nothing, and thousands of Iranians, including more than 100 children. And going back to the World Cup, the Iranian team showed up with photos of some of the girls that were killed in that attack. That was a U.S. drone attack. Wow. It's just an absolutely pathetic agreement that's really not an agreement. And the president and Trump is saying, oh, well, we won. And what did we win? We didn't win anything. We didn't get any concessions from Iran. This deal does not include Israel, and Israel can continue to do whatever they want over there.
And that's what I was getting ready to say.
Including to continue to bomb Lebanon. And everybody, you know, all the conspiracy theories are, and we've talked about this, that this is all about the Trump people and the rest of his cronies going over there to put up hotels and golf courses and all of that. Wow. You know, it's just an, you know.
Because Netanyahu does not want this to be over. And he will continue to bomb. Let's make no mistake. He already has.
Yeah, but he's bombing with U.S. funded bombs, right? We're giving them the bombs.
Yeah,
right. That's part of the problem.
He doesn't want it to be over, because then people will start focusing on his horrendous legacy in Israel right now, and so this way he gets a lot of support because, oh, well, Israel is under attack, and who in Israel is going to not support that? That's his whole idea.
Right.
It's costing U.S. taxpayers tons. I mean, you know, it's the amount is already astronomical.
Yeah, see, in Obama's deal, it was USA didn't spend a dollar because it was all Iran's money that we owed them.
That's correct. And so when people say, oh, well, you gave Iran all this money, actually, no, it was money assets that were frozen
in the 70s.
In the 1979 revolution, where we froze some of those assets, and Obama unfroze them because it was Iranian money. We had really no right to keep that money, whether we liked the Ayatollah or not, was not relevant at the time. It belonged to them, and so we needed to give that back to them.
Yep.
So you have a lot of people in the administration now saying, "Oh, this deal is a lot better than the one that Obama."
But Patricia, I have a question for you from left field. Who's the better scam artist, Ronald Reagan with the Iran-Contra scam, where he sold fake weapons to Iran to fund the Contras, or Trump in this debacle?
Oh, well, definitely this one, because a part of the issue is that Congress is missing in action. You know, during the Iran-Contra whole idea with Oliver North, if you remember him, saying, yeah, he told me to do this. Remember, there were a lot of hearings about that, just like there were a lot of hearings with Watergate. And it was the Republicans who were pressuring Reagan and pressuring Nixon at the time. Hey, we need to do something about this. This is not good. And the whole thing blew up in their face with some really incredible reporting from Seymour Hersh at the New York Times at the time.
Yeah.
Now you have a Congress that is basically falling down on the job. Now they're getting their backbone little by little, but they're still missing in action on a lot of things, including not criticizing the president directly or any of these kinds of things until they come up with these ridiculous things of let's give them $300 billion. But he's been able to get away with a lot of this stuff because you have a Congress that is not paying attention, not doing their job that the Constitution requires them to do with the whole checks and balances thing. They're basically letting all of this happen, and that has caused an enormous amount of consternation. But the Democrats, if they're smart, are going to take advantage of a lot of this stuff for the midterms. But there's a lot of things that he continues to do that fall right under the radar, such as, you know, telling the U.S. Postal Service to not treat mail-in ballots better than regular mail. All of these little things leading up to the midterm elections that if people are not paying attention to, that's how he's able to do this.
So, Patricia, like, is there any blowback from the Republicans across the aisle on this payout to Iran?
Yeah, no, she just said earlier that there was. Yeah,
yeah, they're that. That
but part, how significant is it? That's the second follow-up.
Well, that's the thing is that well, they're probably, you know, since this is an agreement to agree to talk, there's nothing that's really permanent written down anywhere. But you better believe when they come back, When Congress is in session for, a few more days before they go off on their July recess, that's going to be one of the big issues right now is that agreement cannot happen with those $300 million billion.
Yeah.
And you have the White House saying, well, gasoline prices are already starting to go down. Yeah, but what happens when the shipments that used to be free to go through the Straits of Hormuz, now you have to start charging people? And Iran is saying we're going to charge people up to $1 million a day.
Now, is there any similarity with this payout to Iran and this other payout that they're standing by right now with the, what do they call it, the weaponization or the insurrectionist fund? What is
yeah,
it?
That, don't that, talk about that. That was at that $1.776 billion that they were going to be paying out to people right. that the Trump administration said felt used and abused by the administration, including all of those January 6th people that tried to overthrow the government. And if you look at the Constitution, it says in one of the amendments that traitors, because that's what you are when you try to overthrow a government, mm-hmm. cannot be paid any kind of money. And so the Justice Department decided to kind of put that aside, but they didn't completely put it away. So it's still floating out there. And the Republicans, a few of them, including Lindsey Graham, who's been carrying water for Trump since the beginning, says, well, we still have to look at it and see, because some people felt that they needed to be paid, which is just a ridiculous thing for him to say, especially considering that he used to be a lawyer. But you still have a lot of Republicans that are carrying water for the administration and not wanting to get involved in things because they're afraid, a lot of them, of losing their job, of getting primaried out and getting kicked out. Because look what happened to Senator Cornyn in Texas.
Right.
He lost the primary after he even was bootlicking the president by saying, I'm going to name a major highway in Texas after you, the Donald Trump Highway. And then after he lost, he said, oh, well, I guess I'm not going to do that.
You know? The crazy thing is, just a couple side notes, with the Iran-Contra, people forget about Reagan and the crack epidemic that he created.
We had
Rick Ross on this show.
Yeah, they're right.
And I asked Rick Ross, Freeway Rick Ross, I said, I didn't think he would go for it. I said, what happened with the whole crack epidemic thing? He told me they would fly him to Nicaragua, right? Mm-hmm. Sell him the cocaine, ship it back for him.
Yeah.
And let him distribute it through the black and brown neighborhoods.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, so,
and not only that,
but let me just finish this.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I said to him, how come they busted you? He said, because they felt like I was making too much money, getting too much power. He said the same people that sold it to him were the same people that came through his front door and arrested him.
Of course. But it was all set up, because even when they were doing that, remember he was talking about how just mysterious trucks would be parked in the hood, and they were full of guns.
Yeah, dropping guns off over by the railroad
tracks. And they just leave them there.
Yeah.
And then people would break in, steal them, and this is how this all started.
Well, and look at the sentencing for crack versus the sentencing for cocaine.
Yep.
There's no coincidence that if you're caught with crack cocaine, that's usually a black or a Latino person.
Yep.
Your sentence is a lot higher. Yep. And a white person with cocaine.
What's created?
And that is still going on right now, even though the crack epidemic has largely disappeared. But you know, it's disappeared because a lot of those neighborhoods are now gentrified.
They destroyed a whole generation. And because of the crack epidemic, that's why they got the crime bill. You would have never had the crime bill if Reagan never created the crack epidemic.
So job complete. That's why you see it all like filtering out. Like it's because the job has been completed. What they were trying to object, the objective has been achieved.
Yeah, and like the three strikes and you're out in New York, the Rockefeller laws, which is basically the same thing.
Yep.
And that you have people serving life sentences for small amounts of drugs in the same jails with people who go on a murder spree. Right.
Yeah. And it's funny how you see these things, like when you're living through them, you don't see what's happening. But in retrospect, when you look back, you realize, oh, maybe I wasn't such a crazy conspiracy theorist because something was going on.
And it's still going on. And unfortunately, because there's been so much media consolidation and layoffs, et cetera, you don't have a lot of people that are able to report on it. If you think about it, Woodward and Bernstein spent three years on one story. That just doesn't happen anymore. And so you have a lot of folks who would love to report on some of these things, but they just don't have the personnel to do it because they're juggling so many different things. I mean, there are some outlets that do an excellent job of reporting some of these things, such as ProPublica and the Texas Tribune, for instance, and even the New York Times and some of the smaller outlets. But you don't see a lot of these stories that you would in the before, because there's just not that many people doing that. And combined with a Congress that's basically letting the president do whatever the hell he wants, then that becomes a big issue. And anybody who says, well, the Democrats aren't doing anything either, well, they're not in the majority. They can't do anything. I mean, it may change if they take control of at least one of the houses of Congress in November, but right now their hands are tied.
That's great. Patricia, we're going to go to break. We'll come back with you after this break on KPFK 90.7 FM, the Pocho Hour of Power.
Happy Juneteenth, Southern California, from your family at KPFK. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being the heart of this people-powered radio station. Today, we celebrate Black liberation, culture, and resilience. In these particularly challenging times, Juneteenth carries a deep meaning for all of us. It's a reminder that hope is a fierce action, and that true freedom requires constant collective care. To our wonderful listeners, thank you for standing with independent community radio. KPFK stands with you today and every day. Let's celebrate freedom, protect our collective rights, and keep pushing forward together. Happy Juneteenth.
Hi, this is Lonnie Jordan from the band War, and you're listening to the Pocho Hour of Power.
Oh, yeah, we're back. KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm Jeff Keller. I'm here with Patricia.
Hey, hey.
What's up, man, girl? Hey, you know what's crazy is when we talk about oil prices, you know, we should all, and gas prices, we always should always mention refineries, right? Because they control how much gas goes out there and how much doesn't go out there.
Yeah, and you remember, too, that the summer petroleum is different than the winter
one. Yes, different blends.
Yeah, and it takes a little bit longer to refine. So when people say, oh, well, gas is going to go down right away, it has gone down a little bit, but a lot of it has to do with how many what's available out there. And the Trump administration has actually tapped into those reserves, which a lot of people didn't know too much about. And that's why the prices have been able to go down a little bit faster than usual. But again, because this is just an agreement to talk about, you know, continuing to agree on something, maybe, maybe not. There's too many things that are up in the air about that particular thing.
And the craziness is this is the first time we've exported more oil than we brought in.
Yeah. Yeah. And remember that a lot of the oil that comes here to the U.S. is from Canada,
right?
Not from the Middle East. So, and you also have to remember that a lot of the suppliers are just being outright greedy and just
say that again, girl. Say that one more time.
Suppliers are being outright greedy and just, jacking up the price just to jack up the price because they can't, you know?
Yep. Yep. Refineries jack up their price and the gas station owners jack up their prices and the people are the ones that get jacked.
That's right.
And
we all know that Trump doesn't spend any money on suntan oil. He gets it sprayed on.
Spray on.
Yeah.
Oh, true.
And you know, and he looked especially tan during that UFC fight at the White House grounds last weekend, which if you remember, one of the fighters, and I can't remember his name, and it's not even worth naming him,
No.
He got up and said, you know, oh, God Bless America and some other crap. And he said also, well, you know, and Michelle Obama's a man. And people started laughing. There was nothing out of the White House that contradicted what he said. Right. And the UFC CEO, Dana White, said, well, it's a freedom of speech, blah, blah, blah. Contrast that to yesterday when the Obama Center, which was more than just a library, opened up in Chicago. 4 hours of some top stars, celebrities, regular folks coming to honor the former First Family, the Michelle and Barack Obama. And if you haven't heard Michelle Obama's speech, she was on fire and didn't name Trump by name, but basically trolled him in a few spots, including, and, you know, my husband who won a Peace Prize. And, you know, basically saying we don't have to, you know, a real man doesn't attack women, those kinds of things. And Obama's speech was also on fire, too. Yep. You contrast that to what we have in the current White House, where the Georgia Senator John Ossoff is called by Trump John Oss Jerkoff, you know, so. Really infantile, childish kind of insult.
Is that because he's of Russian descent?
Well, yeah, no, probably, you know. that was the first thing I thought of, definitely. Oh, my goodness. And so, you know, looking ahead to what's going to be happening, we have the Supreme Court with some major decisions coming up, including the birthright citizenship case and a case involving mail-in ballots in California, yeah, which would definitely affect mail-in ballots in the rest of the country. And this is one thing that, and we've talked about this before, that the president has talked about how, you know, mail-in ballots, there's a lot of fraud and waste, which is not true at all. Not, in fact, he himself mails in his own ballot. Many Americans living overseas mail in their ballots. The military serving overseas mail in their ballots. So the cases of fraud in mail-in ballots are minuscule. I think they found two cases of fraud. Yep. Last year, and both Republicans, basically. So, but this is the type of thing that the Trump administration tries to do to inject fear into what people are doing. You know, just like they do fear with immigrants, fear of mail-in ballots, fear of, you know, people who are not citizens. Oh my God, birthright citizenship. Even though 4 of his 5 kids were born to immigrant women. But he doesn't, you know, that doesn't mean anything to him or anybody else, right, in the White House, especially somebody like Stephen Miller, who's been pushing very hard to continue with these immigration raids and the tensions that, even though we don't see too much of that on the television these days, they're still going on. They are still going on.
Yep.
There's people that are still detained in squalid, horrible conditions in, yep, New Jersey, in Texas, all over, in these private detention centers that are run by companies that are making money hand over fist on these things, in squalid, horrible conditions. They're almost like detention camps.
Yep.
And that's still continuing.
Well, you know, the one thing, the beauty of seeing Obama speech, it was like, you know what? This is what presidential used to look like.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know. It comes, if you weren't watching it and you were listening to it, you almost forgot that you were in 2026. You thought that you were back during the Obama administration.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
He sounded very presidential, and there were several members of the public that showed up in tan suits. And if you remember that whole ridiculous controversy when Obama was president, on a hot summer day one time, he showed up in a tan suit, and the right wing crazies, they weren't maggots back then. they were just right wing crazies went nuts about it.
Yeah. Well, Patricia, we got to go.
But Patricia,
man, it's always a pleasure to speak with you and have you on the Pocho Hour Power. We're so lucky to have you in DC with your thumb on the pulse, so to speak, of what's happening. And
I look forward to it every weekend. So I'll be back because I know that you've got to do the rest of the show with my friend Russell Contreras.
That's right.
Well, happy Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth to everybody out there. And if you know what that is, please Google. Come on, folks.
I'll explain it to them later.
we're gonna do a crash course before the show's over.
Yes. They didn't have email back then.
I was sitting in Galveston. I had no idea that this was going on. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's basically what happened, folks.
I've been working for free an extra 2 years. What?
Yeah, what the hell, man?
All right. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Patricia.
All right. We'll talk to you later, folks.
All right.
And you know what? We're going to talk to one of our favorite correspondents out of New Mexico. But before we do that, there's this salsa band who just crowded their way up in the studio.
What?
What
again?
Are they doing here?
What's that smell?
Oh, are they whistling now?
Oh. Russell Contreras live on KPFK 90.7 FM, the Pocho Hour of Power. What's up, brother?
Pochies and Pochexes, happy Juneteenth to all of you, and happy Juneteenth from New Mexico. As a product and son of Houston, Juneteenth was really important for us. And this week we did a deep dive. I'm getting in the pulse of what Juneteenth is around the country. As soon as the president came in, you saw kind of a regression of Juneteenth.
Right.
He even said last year that we had too many holidays as we approached Juneteenth. Tried to attack it, but we looked at it, and you know what? You cannot get rid of Juneteenth. It was passed by law. It was signed by President Biden. So it is now a federal holiday. We looked at about 33 states do offer some sort of holiday time off, and the rest of the states do not. Some corporations have gone back when initially Juneteenth was celebrated, did honor Juneteenth and continue to do in ways while they're pulling back DEI and all sorts of other initiatives. One company we looked at, Target, is sort of antithesis of what's going on here. Is Target has pulled back a lot of its DEI initiatives, but at the same time keeping Juneteenth. They do offer Juneteenth as a paid holiday, time and a half off, and their distributions are closed, but they do have their companies are open. I mean, the distributions are open. Sorry about that. But a lot of companies are doing that. One company in particular, Nike, is giving everybody off. The retail stores are closed, and their headquarters are closed to honor Juneteenth. So it's going back and forth all over the place. Denver last week actually had to reduce their Juneteenth from 4 days to 2 days celebration because sponsors pulled out. This year, sponsors have returned. So it appears that Juneteenth is not going away. In fact, it is resilient and going across the country and continues to rise and spread despite backlash.
Yeah, I was going to go swimming today. There's a pool over by my house, and I swim over there. And today I went to swim, and it was closed. And then I go, oh, yeah, it's Juneteenth. Got me.
That's right. And really interesting thing, as I mentioned, Juneteenth.
That's kind of ironic, though.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought.
Yeah. Closed on Juneteenth. You know, an interesting note, I wrote about this a couple of years ago as someone who was found a descendant of someone who was connected to the Underground Railroad to Mexico. You have to remember, enslaved people in Texas, where I come from, did not go north for freedom, but south. This next month, the descendants of those who are part of the Underground Railroad will get together with the descendants of Sylvia Weber. Those who don't know, Sylvia Weber was the Harriet Tubman of the South. We'll be getting together for the first time ever in the University of Texas, the descendants of the Underground Railroad, with the freedom, those who led those to freedom. We're going to get together, share stories. We'll be connecting. Juneteenth is where we're starting our conversation. And we'll be ending it in Austin, Texas. First time descendants together, talking about trying to recreate the history that has been lost, because a lot of times when descendants went to Mexico, they were not literate. They changed their names. We don't know their story. We're trying to recapture them.
Yeah, I love that, because I just had this conversation with some people the other day, some black folks. I was doing this show, and I talked about the Underground Railroad going into Mexico. And they're like, no, that ain't what I'm saying. Dude, I'm telling you. I said, not only was it, they fought for those black folks to be free.
Right.
Well, and they gave them some land.
Didn't
they did.
Wasn't that a large part with what happened with the Alamo and the Texas settlers? They had slaves, and that was a big issue with Mexico, right, when they came
that
down.
That is right. Someone who had to learn Texas history, they didn't teach us that this war was actually about the Texas Revolution. It was largely about enslavement and those fighting it. And that's the discussion. Interesting fun fact, for those who have been watching the World Cup, and we saw Mexico, have been watching the Mexico team, some people were kind of thrown off. The first person who scored the
Come goal on now. Come on, say it.
Was a brother.
That's right. Come on now.
I got like 10 text messages from my brothers. Like, hey, what's up? What's going on with that? Yes, he is a player from Colombia, and a lot of Colombian players do play in La Liga de Mexico. So that is not unusual. And what Mexico was enduring as the United States is its own reckoning with race and its own reckoning with Afro-Mexicanos. That sparked another discussion. Said, yes, this brother was Colombia, but guess what? We've got about 3 million Afro-Mexicanos who live in the United States, live in Mexico. That is about the size of Houston. We need to have that conversation and talk about the story of these people, where they're from, and it's a diverse story, and finally have that reckoning in the country of Mexico, but also in the United States.
So you look, I didn't have your phone number. Boy, I would have called. I was going to call you.
And speaking of pride, the other thing we looked at this week is America 250 is coming up in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But we had two polls come out, one from the Public Religion Research Institute and from Pew, kind of took a pulse about what America is at 250. Two things emerged. Americans are not as proud as they were back in 2013. Back then, you ask people, 80% of Americans said they were proud to be American. Today, it's around 50%. It's split around race. It's split around religion. Those who are white evangelicals, about 73% say they're proud to be American. But if you ask black Protestants, the number goes around 30%. And so those who are religiously unaffiliated, 30%. It shows that the pride in America are split based on race and religion. And as we move closer to the 250th anniversary of the nation's founding, you see a big split among race and religion. We're not being connected. Also, the criticism at the Trump administration, that is this Freedom 250 organization, kind of like the political arm of the celebration, more aligned with the Trump administration, seems to be telling a narrow story about the country's past. And the next week, we'll be looking at alternative 250 celebrations going on with Asian Americans, Latino, Black Americans, and also Jewish Americans, how they're telling a different story because they feel they're being excluded.
Wow. Now, I created a page on Facebook for an experiment, and I put up this pro-Trump stuff. It got like 150 followers in one day. And then today I put up the Obama speech. The hate that was put under that speech by these people, you're like, no wonder this country is so jacked up. I just wanted to see what they would say. And they were going off. He should die. They should arrest him. He's a divider.
Oh my God.
I'm like, oh, my God. This country is divided. It's jacked up.
That's right. And the other thing it's divided on is also the religion. A couple of weeks ago, there was the Rejection 250. A lot of white evangelicals had an event at the National Mall where they were reclaiming the country for Christ. And a lot of the speakers were arguing that this nation was founded as a Christian nation. Well, there's a new group called Faith 250. They're forming their multi-faith organization. They say, actually, we're going to go around and educate people on religious liberties. And we're actually going to look at the text of some of the founding fathers. And would you know that if you know more about Thomas Jefferson or John Adams or George Washington, if you knew what they wrote, you might actually cancel them.
Right.
George Washington, for example, talked about providence, but rarely mentioned Jesus. And Thomas Jefferson, this is my favorite, rewrote the Bible. He went into the Bible and cut out parts of the gospel that he thought were he could not prove that Jesus committed miracles. And he said, oh, can't prove it. I'm going to cut it out. Imagine doing that now and posting it on social media. That particular founding father would be canceled right away. And these members of the Faith 250 groups are saying, let's have that conversation.
Well, it sounds like Jefferson would have been really had his Bible put on Pinterest. I only like these parts of the Bible.
Exactly. Exactly. Not only would he put it on Pinterest, he would have published it.
Yeah.
And said, look at this, look what I did. And so that's what's really unique on this, the America 250, is that it is coming across as having these discussions about religion and race. That it's bringing in the Faith 250 folks. It's a coalition of Jewish, secular, Catholic, and Black Protestants together. Let's have a discussion, because we're going to look at religion in the United States and its diversity. That's the conversation.
Yeah, it's amazing because, you know, they say they're religious, but they don't want to feed the poor or help the homeless.
But you know what's amazing about this country, and in the 250 years of this experiment, is that there's so many different Americas. I used to say there are two Americas, but there's way more than two.
Oh, now
there's just like you know, you have the rich, affluent. You have the people who don't give a damn about anyone, who got no money. You have this classism. You have these racial divides. You have cultural divides. You have religious divides, and it's really becoming some thing that's been used to separate us rather than bring us together. And it's crazy that after 250 years, this is what the boiling pot has come down to, this scientific petri dish in which we've been like separated. And I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that, man? Because I don't. It drives me crazy.
I do, but go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm asking. You
know, interesting. Pew came out with this report and said, look, one of the studies said Americas are divided. However, they're not very keen on the America 250, but they're very hopeful about America 2050. They believe a lot of these divisions will go away. They believe that there will be moving in a more multiracial society. They believe things will get better. Essentially, what they're saying is that some people have to die first,
right,
before we get there. That's what they're saying.
What was the age range?
What
was the age range of the study? Do you know?
Yes, Gen Z were the most optimistic. They were the most pessimistic about its current days, but they're more optimistic about the days ahead. They're basically saying, look, guys, when we take control, we're going to be good. We got to wait for somebody to go. Right. I don't know who they're saying to somebody.
The boomers. They're waiting for the boomers.
I have a feeling it's the boomers, and I have a feeling that some of the Gen X folks, you know, our generation, right? But in many ways, they actually appreciate Gen X because they love our music and everything.
Right.
But, like, maybe y'all should get involved. You know, the boomers have been along too far.
Right.
Maybe it's time for them to step aside. This is what the poll is saying. But they're much more optimistic of the future. Mm. America, as I looked at it, you know, as we look at the next 250 years, it's going to have a discussion how it uses race as a category, because the way we categorize race today is going to be fundamentally different in the next coming decades.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't really have a good grasp of multiracial Americans. We don't look at them. We don't categorize them. Our categories are antiquated. And Gen Z is saying, you know what? We get involved, step aside. We'll take care of it. Much more optimistic view of the nation.
Yeah, because right now, I don't care if you're a white guy from Africa and you come to America, you're just a white guy. If you're a black guy from Switzerland, You're not Swedish. You're a black guy in America.
Yeah, that's right. And it has confused us when we go overseas. I've gone to London, and I've been lost, and I don't know where to go. Naturally, I'll go to someone who's a brother, a guy like, hey, can you help me out? And it always throws me off when the brother with dreads starts talking like Hamlet. You know, I was going up there trying to talk to Jeffrey, and here comes Romeo up in here. Right? And it always shocks me because that's my Americanist speak.
Right.
I'm making assumptions. And I don't really, it takes me a while to say, oh, this brother is a descendant of the Windrush generation from Jamaica. Or this is a Nigerian immigrant, you know, the son of Nigerian immigrants. I automatically assumed in putting my own Americanist on race and not taking account of how race is viewed in France or Germany or England. A fundamentally different thing, and I think eventually the United States is going to have to catch up. They know so much more about us than we know about them.
Yep. See, we judge each other on color. They judge each other from where they're from.
Exactly. And class. So when that brother was like telling me, I had to tell him to stop because I didn't understand him, and he was speaking English.
Oh, tell me, sir, did you take it from? You're like, wait,
exactly.
What?
And he was like telling me, go here, turn there, and how many meters? I was like, whoa, meters? What do you mean meters, bro? Meters? What are you talking about?
Oh, you must be from America. That's,
yeah, exactly. He said, you American, and he kind of rolled his eyes, right? And then when you say national, and then when you go to the any kind of British government thing, when they say nationality, I'm like, oh, Latino? And they're like, no, where are you from? What country? Oh, U.S.
Yeah.
They're like, just roll their eyes like, y'all do some weird stuff over there.
And they're right. We do weird stuff. But that's
how we
keep the elites and the poor.
You have to say you're from the Republic of New Mexico.
Right. Then they'll be like, oh, yeah, no, bro. Oh, we feel for you. No, I'm sorry.
Well, it's crazy because when I travel out, and you travel outside out here, they like Californians in New York because they know that we have open
minds. I always say I'm from California.
Yeah, the rest of the country they can't stand.
Right, exactly.
But, you know how many times I had to explain to foreigners that there's two different Americas is what I always say. There's the America I'm from, and then there's the white elite America.
All right. Well, we got to get out on time. Anything else that you want to
hit us with before we go?
Before we look, the next story we're looking on, we're looking at the alternative celebrations of 250, what other groups are doing. We'll have that in Axios. Go to axios.com/newsletters. Get your AM newsletter in your inbox for free every morning. Until then, we'll see you.
Bye. Ole, thank you, man. It's always great to have you with us.
Thank you, brother.
You too, brother.
Yo, I want to thank my man Contreras out there. He is the man. I don't care what anybody says. I like to thank Patricia
Guadalupe. Thank you, our Washington correspondent.
I want to thank Lalo.
I want to thank you, Jeffrey Keller.
Well, thank you, brother. I want to thank you, Zul.
Eso.
I want to thank the Wizard of Ozzy.
Ozzy.
Working the board.
Working it.
And this weekend, I'll be at the Comedy Chateau. Come on out, 8 o'clock. It's North Hollywood on Lancashire. Say my name. Get in free. Yes. I'll be causing problems out there. We got to thank Gary Barker, the producer.
Yeah.
And guess what, people? This is the Poach Hour Power. We out of here.
Yeah, stay safe and be cool. And go Mexico.
Happy Juneteenth, Southern California, from your family at KPFK. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being the heart of this people-powered radio station. Today, we celebrate Black liberation, culture, and resilience. In these particularly challenging times, Juneteenth carries a deep meaning for all of us. It's a reminder that hope is a fierce action, and that true freedom requires constant collective care. To our wonderful listeners, thank you for standing with independent community radio. KPFK stands with you today and every day. Let's celebrate freedom, protect our collective rights, and keep pushing forward together. Happy Juneteenth.
Yeah. Hi, this is Michelle Coltrane. Join me every Saturday at 4 a.m. for my show, Awakenings. We will be taking a musical and spiritual journey into the world of Alice Coltrane and beyond. That's Awakenings every Saturday, 4 a.m. on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles and online for the world at kpfk.org.
Shanti. You're tuned in to Pacifica Radio, KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. Streaming around the universe on kpfk.org, where you can check out our past shows, podcasts,